Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Tuesday, April 23rd. I'm Hannah Floor. The Alaska Senate rolled out its first draft of the state's operating budget last week. The budget includes a roughly $1,300 permanent fund dividend for residents, plus about $175 in an energy relief check. That is substantially lower than the roughly $2,300 payout passed by the House. The Senate's operating budget chair, Republican Bert Stedman of Sitka, says the state has been, quote, blessed the last couple of years by high oil prices. But Stedman says that won't last forever.
I would suggest that use a reasonable dividend expectation that can be attained going forward so we don't put ourselves in a position where we have fairly strong dividends and we get up one year and there is no dividend. That's what I want to avoid.
Stedman and other members of the bipartisan Senate majority have warned in recent weeks that the larger dividend passed by the House doesn't leave room for agreed-upon spending on capital projects or recently passed bills. Meanwhile, Governor Mike Dunleavy, who has made large dividends a key part of his platform, said on the statewide call-in show Talk of Alaska that he'd prefer a dividend above $2,000. He suggested spending a portion of the state's roughly $2.8 billion savings account, known as the Constitutional Budget Reserve. Here is Dunleavy responding to a question from Talk of Alaska host Lori Townsend.
When you say there's other ways to pay for the dividend, what would that be?
Well, the CBR's got money in it as well. And during these difficult inflationary times, I think we have to give due consideration to what people are going through, as the caller kind of alluded to. But certainly... legislature is going to make their decisions. And again, I know it's from all indication, this is not going to be a full PFD. Hopefully it's somewhere north of $2,000 to help people.
House Speaker Kathy Tilton, a Wasilla Republican, says she'd like the biggest savings, biggest dividend possible. But she says she's not sure that spending from the savings account will be possible.
I think that the bigger question would be, would we be able to go into the Constitutional Budget Reserve and have the votes available for that?
It takes a three-quarters vote in the House and Senate to spend from the account. That means the Republican-led majority couldn't do it alone, and they may not get support from their colleagues. Minority caucus Democrats and independents spoke out against what they saw as an unbalanced budget as it passed the House earlier this month. The Alaska Senate passed a bill yesterday to tighten residency requirements on hunting and fishing licenses. If it becomes law, only Alaskans eligible for a permanent fund dividend would be eligible for a resident license. Wildlife troopers say it would close a loophole that makes it difficult to prosecute people who claim residency but do not spend most of their time in the state. Eric Stone reports from Juneau.
Kurt Whitehead lives in Klawak on Prince of Wales Island. And he says every summer as the humpbacks and herring and salmon return, so too do the island's seasonal residents.
They're basically tourists. You could be nice and call them seasonal residents, but really they only come to our state just for the hunting and the fishing, and sometimes they stay as little as 1 week, and sometimes they stay as much as maybe 4 or 5 months. But their whole intent is just to harvest as much as possible.
Unlike most tourists, they're able to buy fishing and hunting licenses reserved for residents. Whitehead says that's because of the state's eligibility requirements. Once you're in Alaska for a year, basically all you have to do is keep a home in the state, plan to come back, and not claim residency anywhere else.
Some of them do have homes, but there's a large majority of them that just have an RV parked on somebody's lot.
A deputy director of the Alaska Wildlife Troopers told a House committee earlier this year that the loose definition of residency makes it difficult for officials to prosecute people who take advantage. Resident licenses typically have higher daily catch limits and allow folks to participate in resident-only personal use fisheries, like dip netting on the Copper or Kenai Rivers. Or take king salmon. In Southeast, non-residents are limited to between 1 and 3 kings a year, but residents this summer can catch 2 per day. Resident licenses are also a lot cheaper, often 4 or 5 times less expensive than what non-residents pay. Whitehead sits on several state-sponsored fish and game advisory committees for Prince of Wales Island communities, and he's been pushing lawmakers to pass a bill that would eliminate the residency loophole. It would tie residency to PFD eligibility, and that means in most cases you can't leave the state for more than 180 days during the year. There are some exceptions for people in the military and college students and some others, though there's some debate about how consistently those are applied in practice. Clinton Cook leads the Craig Tribal Association, not too far from Klawak on Prince of Wales Island, and he says people who spend most of their time out of state shouldn't benefit from the breaks the state cuts for its residents.
They're a citizen when it's convenient for them, and, you know, that's not okay.
Tribes, fish and game committees, and municipalities from around the state submitted letters in support of the bill. Nikiski Republican Senator Jesse Bjorkman sponsored it in the Senate.
When people who do not live permanently in Alaska capitalize on fish and game laws meant for residents, they diminish harvest opportunities for year-round residents, the people who shovel snow and stick it out throughout the entire course of the year in our great state.
Senator Mike Schauer, a Wasilla Republican, said he's concerned it could exclude some retirees who leave Alaska for extended periods despite a long history in the state.
There are some concerns from a number of individuals about what this may impact, especially on those that may leave the state for the wintertime, which a lot of us do as you get older, go out and visit family and things like that.
He said he was concerned that it could violate the Alaska Constitution's guarantee of equal access to fish and game resources. The Senate ultimately passed the bill 15-5. It now heads to the House, where its prospects are unclear. Lawmakers have just about 3 weeks until all legislation dies at the end of the regular session. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
A group of Petersburg High School students returned from a trip to New York City and Washington, D.C. this month, where they got a close look at how the government works. As KFSK's Shelby Herbert reports, some students say the visit helped them find their voice in state and national politics.
A program called Close Up arranged for students from all over the country, including Petersburg, to visit America's capital this year. The program began amid a period of protest brought about by the Vietnam War. And a protest is exactly where I found a few Petersburg High School students shortly after they got back from the close-up trip. A group of them marched out of class and into the streets in support of state education funding in early April. Senior Dakota Caples was leading the pack. She said she felt ready to put her new civics knowledge to practice almost as soon as she got home.
I just went to Close Up with a bunch of people that were here, and we learned about these types of things.
Yeah, we learned about the cooperational and oppositional ways to protest and show our grievances out there.
Senior Logan Haley says he had an interest in national politics way ahead of the trip, and getting out there to see how and where the sausage gets made only stoked that interest further.
It was really, really cool going into the Capitol building, just seeing how things functioned. We got to meet with the staffers for the senators and representatives, and it was very, very interesting to learn how they get things done and doing the work for the representatives for our state. That was my main thing that I took away from it, was just learning how they had a functioning, you know, group there.
The trip's chaperones say it was a thrill to see it all through their students' eyes. Like Petersburg High School alumna Becky Martin.
The excitement of the architecture and the beautiful cherry blossoms and going into the actual Senate chambers, knowing that that was such a unique experience that the students were getting. Then everything they learn about, they have something to connect it to. They have a visual of, oh, I know where that place is. Oh, I know how that works. And, oh, now I understand how these parts of the government work together, because that visual representation just makes it so much more tangible.
It was also an opportunity for students from other schools to learn more about them and their lives in Alaska. Logan says he got hit with all the classic questions.
Ride a polar bear to school and live in an igloo.
In spite of their excitement, many students say the trip wasn't a walk in the park. They had to push through jet lag to get to early events and workshops. In order to get around, they also had to use almost every form of transportation imaginable to them, aside from polar bears.
Plane, train, and boat. We did all of them. And then bus and car, and pretty much took every mode of transportation.
Scooters.
And you didn't lose anybody.
I don't think so.
But chaperone Becky Martin says the hardest work started long before the trip began. Martin was helping Petersburg students raise funds through the better part of last year. The group mostly paid their way by harvesting seaweed to sell as garden mulch, bagging it up in big piles, and sifting through the sand fleas.
Oh, when we were collecting the seaweed, we're collecting it from the beach. So as students and their parents were collecting it with their hands, the sand fleas were just like popping out of it. And I think that surprised some people.
The group says all that hard work paid dividends in civics knowledge straight from America's capital. And for many of them, that comes at a pivotal moment. as they approach the first general election they're old enough to vote in. In Petersburg, I'm Shelby Herbert.
Alaska's sole Grade A certified goat dairy is located on Kodiak Island. The owner is producing products like cheese, milk, and ice cream. Dairy farming is not an easy business, but as Davis Hovey reports, the micro dairy at Heritage Farm and Ranch is making it work by selling a variety of products and focusing on efficiency.
Kelly Foreman begins every morning tending to her more than 20 goats at the Heritage Farm and Ranch in Kodiak, and a couple of her nanny goats are pregnant.
Right now they're all growing babies, so they are... They're the ladies.
The fifth generation farmer started her dairy in Kodiak 10 years ago with animals donated from her friends and other farmers across the state.
Kind of joke that I started a Grade A dairy with a C team. You know, I had friends that I found on the mainland. I had a couple here, and it was just trying to find, like, they're like, this goat's older, this udder doesn't, and I was like, it doesn't matter. Like, I'll let me, like, as long as they're from a clean herd and they have good genetics, let's bring them in. And so really the dairy started with 8 goats.
As Foreman has added more goats over time, she has also become more efficient with the products she produces and sells. Foreman says as a dairy farmer in Alaska, you can't put all your eggs or goat milk in one basket if you want to make ends meet financially.
We sell milk, we have cheese, we have skyr, soap, lotion, you know, like there's caramel, fudge, you know, syrups. So your value-added products can start to do that.
Foreman sells her products at a local co-op grocery store in Kodiak, but right now none of her milk or cheese is available until she is able to milk again. She says usually she milks her goats on a daily basis, but since the majority of her goats are pregnant right now, she's waiting until after they give birth to resume milking. Foreman owns and operates the state's only Grade A certified goat dairy. That means she adheres to strict state and federal regulations surrounding the production, processing, and distribution of her products. Foreman sells raw, unpasteurized milk, which has been legal since March of 2023 in Alaska. Recently selected state veterinarian Dr. Sarah Coburn says Grade A raw milk can be sold to a restaurant, grocery store, or even directly to the consumer.
And there's no regulatory oversight over that. As far as routine inspections or things like that, it's really incumbent upon the consumer, the buyer, and the producer to make sure that they're in compliance with the regulations as they're written and the safety parameters.
That has forced Foreman to meet sanitary standards by doing things like purchasing a commercial-grade dishwasher, which she uses to sanitize her glass milk bottles. As Dr. Coburn puts it, Foreman has found a way to make a micro-sized goat dairy on Kodiak Island operate efficiently and economically.
She found a company that provides dairy equipment that meets the Grade A standard, so it's just smaller, and it's made for a small facility for, you know, 10 to 20 or 30 animals. So there's ways to do it in a more economical, smaller scale way and still meet all of those parameters of cleanability and maintenance and all the things that go into it.
Foreman says state regulation and operational changes like this have really benefited her bottom line.
So I could sell the same products, but not have to have, you know, the same inspections, not have to have the same type of bottling, as long as you have informed consumers.
Instead of using Grade A certified plastic containers, she decided to sell her raw goat's milk in reusable glass bottles, saving her potentially thousands of dollars annually. The trade-off is she has to apply a special label to her milk bottles, acknowledging it's raw milk, unpasteurized, and may contain pathogens. Every detail matters when operating a Grade A dairy, as Foreman handles every part of the process, from raising the goats, milking them, bottling the milk, to all the cleaning, too.
When you go small, when you do things on a micro level, and you'll find a bunch of them across the country, that they like the autonomy of that, you know? So I want it that way. I'm really thrilled to be part of the very beginning to the very end.
When she's milking again, goat products will be available at the local Kodiak Harvest Co-op for thousands to enjoy. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey.
For KFSK, I'm Hannah Flohr.